Hello, wonderful Open Heart Project Sangha. It is great to see you. It is great to be in a Sangha with you. It's great to continue our conversation about living a sacred life. And if you're just joining the Open Heart Project Sangha, welcome. It's so great that you're here. You can go back and listen to earlier talks from this year, but you don't have to. You can jump in right here. And I got a new mic, so kind of looks like weird, but I just want to mention that's why it's there. For the month of May, our theme is patience, the third of the six paramitas. The first one, which we talked about 2 months ago, generosity, which is the foundation for everything, all the other paramitas and spiritual practice in general. Last month, we talked about discipline. You could also say the foundation of the spiritual journey. And this month, we come to patience. And when it comes to our spiritual practice, patience is required for so many reasons. We don't actually know where it's going, at least speaking for myself. We don't know what's happening even during our practice. That is it good or is it bad? Did I do anything? You know, why am I sitting here doing nothing? Did I accomplish anything? These are questions that are quite natural to ask about your practice when you are sitting there doing nothing. However, if you are patient, you see that through some mysterious means, the results take root. And they look somewhat the same and somewhat different for all of us. Maybe you've noticed a little more softness in yourself. Maybe you've noticed a little more courage. Maybe you've noticed that you are a little bit or a lot, who knows, less likely to be triggered by things that would have triggered you in the past on good days. These things somehow happen, although we cannot draw a direct line between what we are doing, mindfulness of body, mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of mind, and how those things happen. So I find that very fascinating. And if anyone has an answer for how that happens, I don't want to know it because I prefer the mystery, which I actually think is also the truth. But it takes patience to establish your practice. And then eventually you see something is happening sometimes, and I don't control it, but it's good. It's hard to have patience in the circumstances of our lives. So I just want to acknowledge that right up front. And also to say that in the Buddhist view, patience doesn't have anything to do, as far as I understand it, with saintliness or endless forbearance of a saintly nature, let's say, or thinking whatever happens is okay. That's not what we're looking for with patience. As with many things in Buddhism, the true meaning is not so much connected to how you feel. Your impatience and patience are not necessarily about feelings. They're about the willingness to stay with what is, to stay present, to stay awake, to ride the waves, and perhaps above all, to really not know how things are going to turn out, because you don't. We just really don't know how things are going to turn out. And even when they do turn out, we still don't know what that means. I have a little story that I want to share with you at the end of this video about a recent thing that happened to me that reminded me of this. One of the key components, and this also relates to my story now that I think of it, of patience is waiting. Waiting. It doesn't mean that you don't get upset. Like I said, it doesn't mean that you don't lose interest. But when things arise that invoke your impatience, which is synonymous, you could say, with aggression, you wait. You take a beat. And as Chogyam Trungpa said, you wait for the harmoniousness of a situation to return, which could mean anything. Further, he says, you wait for the harmoniousness to reveal itself without trying to correct the disharmoniousness. Now, this is a very nuanced instruction, something that bears contemplation. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't try to set right what is wrong. Of course, we must. We must. So it doesn't mean just sitting there waiting for life to right itself. It means perhaps sitting there waiting for yourself to right yourself. Before you speak or act, you return to a state of harmoniousness, which means openness and authenticity and not lost in your discursiveness about what this means. It's very smart to wonder about what things mean, and it's very smart to analyze situations, but it's not so smart to solidify whatever it is you come up with. So you continue to ride what is presenting itself. Again, from Chögyam Trungpa, the analogy that he gives for patience is the ocean, which in a sense, he says, cannot be disturbed. However, it is in a constant state of disturbance. There are waves, there are storms, there are depths, there are tides. It is constantly moving. And at the same time, it cannot be disturbed in this very poetic sense. So you and I are the same. Things are constantly moving. We're getting upset. Things are coming in. Things are going out. Things are what we expected. Things are things are unexpected. And we feel all of those things. At the same time, you cannot be disturbed. At the foundation of all of this movement is something very still. And some understanding, or maybe that's not the best word, some familiarity with that silence is useful. And you have that familiarity because you are a meditator and you let go, constantly letting go of your thoughts at some point to come back to your breath, which happens against a sea of stillness. So in this way, we get to know the inner stillness, which has a relationship to patience. Within that stillness, there is nothing but patience, I think you could say. Things to think about. As with the other paramitas, at least in this Tibetan Buddhist view, there are three categories of patience, and they're really interesting. I think that goes without saying, at least they are to me. So the first form of patience is called overcoming others' destructiveness, which means perhaps not getting overly involved in their dramas or their aggression. When people are aggressive towards you, you must get involved, but it means not responding to their aggression with more aggression, rather with some kind of spaciousness or understanding, which doesn't mean, oh, it's fine that you're aggressive towards me because I understand you're coming from pain. It just means you acknowledge that pain is present. Here, there's some sense of what I understand Taekwondo to be about, which I'll tell you right now is almost nothing. But there are some forms of martial arts, about which I know almost nothing, that center on countering aggression with aggression. So if something hits you, to deflect it, you hit back. That makes total sense. There are other forms of martial arts, as I understand them, which uses the other person's aggression as your own defense. So if a punch is coming towards you in these forms, you move it away from you thusly, and the force and speed and volition of this movement is then disappeared by you moving it along, by you using it against itself, as it were. And so we're not trying to use anything against anything here, but to counter aggression, this method is more dharmic than this method. So how do you do that? Well, that's a lifelong investigation, But there's some sense of letting it go by, not ignoring it. Please don't misunderstand me. But not getting hooked by it, staying focused on what is really important, what is really true. And if we allow our hatred, which is sometimes can feel quite warranted, and you can hate, that's fine. But if we allow our hatred to guide our actions, we add to the hatred in the world. And I know you don't want to do that. So I looked up something that I remembered the great teacher Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche said, because I wanted to share it with you. It seemed very salient. He's one of the great Nyingma masters and just masters of our lifetime. I think he died about 15 or 18 years ago. Anyway, what he said, I'm looking over here because it's on my screen. This is the key to patience. Once you overcome the hatred within your mind, you will discover that in the world outside, there is no longer any such thing as even a single enemy. So that's really amazing, really interesting, and the formula for unending patience. And you can substitute for hatred any other word you like. Once you overcome the disillusionment in your mind, within your mind, the frustration within your mind, the disappointment within your mind, you will discover in the world outside there's no longer any such thing as even a single enemy. So the inner state is all. And we cultivate some sense of balance within that state through our practice. So yay for that. So overcoming other people's destructiveness in some sense means not getting involved. Don't get in the fight. Fight the good fight all the time. But don't let yourself get hooked so that your words and actions, as said, come from your aggression rather than your open-heartedness. The second category of patience is called realizing the nature of others' aggressiveness or aggression. Yeah, realizing the nature of other people's aggression, which is very related to this first category. You see that there's pain involved. Now, that doesn't make you go, oh, therefore I feel sorry for you, or therefore you win, or therefore I can't fight back. It just means you realize that that too is here and is actually what underlies the situation. Unfortunately for you and me, I think, and this is, and anyone could knock this argument down with a feather, that as practitioners, we have an additional responsibility because we are training to work with our minds. And most people in the world aren't. I'm not saying that makes us better. I am saying it makes us better equipped to overcome, to realize the nature of other people's aggression and to step back and to wait. Another thing that Trungpa Rinpoche said that I often think about when it comes to patience is when you don't know what to do, don't do anything. And I'm sure there are situations in your life currently or in the past, the future, big ones, little ones, where you don't know what to do. And I encourage you to experiment with this. When you don't know what to do, don't do anything. Because a key component here in patience is waiting. Waiting and seeing. And in our final category, individually examining. So waiting is a key part of patience. And another key part embodied in this individually examining is not letting yourself be ruled by your own conclusions, not letting yourself be ruled by your own conclusions, which may be entirely accurate, important, pragmatic, valuable in that moment. Will they be in the next moment? We don't know. Individually examine. Is what I thought then still true? I don't know. I have to look at everything anew, every single time, because it is new. This is an especially important admonition in our current age of extraordinary judgment and polarization. So you may read things in the news or observe things in your community that are horrible. And you know what? They are. They are. They are. But to then make a conclusion about everyone is not right. Individually examined. So you see someone do something bad? Well, you can't hate all people that look like that or even have a judgment about them. I mean, this is the root of so much evil. Same with good things. Oh, well, this person is a spiritual practitioner in this style, so everyone in this style must be good. That's a romantic view and not accurate. So individually examine, which it means that you have to be awake all the time, not resting on conclusions or judgments of the past, even if the past was only 3 seconds ago. So this is especially important in our current time. So how long have I talked? Let me see. I don't know. I do have one more. I do have a little story that I want to share about patience. I don't really know if it is exactly about patience, but it happened very recently. It's very fresh in my mind. And I thought about it when I was thinking about what to say to you about patience. So a long time ago, a really long time ago, like 20 years ago, before I even lived in this apartment that I live in now, which is kind of how I measure time, my mother gave me had a necklace that she wore a lot, all the time. It was a thin chain with a little diamond square that was sort of not this way. It was this way, so it kind of looked like a diamond. Anyway, it's small and beautiful. And one day, out of nowhere, she said, "I want you to have this. I want to give you this." And I was so touched. And I said, "Thank you," and hugged her and put it on and almost never took it off. Probably wore it every day for like 5 years. And then one day I couldn't find it. So this is probably 15 years ago. I couldn't find it. I had no idea where it was. I looked everywhere. I belonged to a gym at the time where I would take it off sometimes to do certain whatever gym things. I called the gym, not in the lost and found. I went by, I asked them like 5 times because it was the only thing. It was the only place I could think of where I might have left it because I wore it all the time otherwise. I never found it. I never found it. And I longed for that necklace to come back to me for all the reasons you can imagine. And years went by. We even moved house where you kind of have to look at everything you got. I never found it. Still, however, to this day, every time I would take like a handbag out of a drawer that I hadn't used in a while or a jacket that I hadn't worn in a while, I'd look in all the pockets, unzip everything. Maybe it's in there. I never found it. I never found it. And it hurt. 3 days ago, I was putting things back in my office where I sit right now because everything had been taken out and the carpet had been replaced. So everything was all over the place. So I'm looking at everything. I'm putting the books back on the shelf. I'm rearranging the shrine. I take this little cup with a lid on it out of a box and I open it. And it's like all these little Tibetan prayer flags. That's all I see in there. Oh, well, let me just take this out, see if the bottom of this thing needs dusting. I take it out, and this is what I find. This. Right there. What? I thought I was dreaming. In fact, I still think I'm dreaming. How did this happen? Where did it go? All these years. How did it get in that cup? I can't ask these questions. It really seemed like a dream. And the only thing that I could think of was magic. I feel like it actually disappeared and reappeared. I know that's illogical, but that's what it feels like. And patience did not make this necklace come back to me. But I never could quite reconcile with the idea that it was gone. And maybe it'll be gone in a second. But I never stopped looking for it. I never stopped thinking it might come back, even though I knew it was impossible, but apparently not. So I guess you could also say in this sense that patience can invoke magic, not the magic of things dematerializing and rematerializing, although I think that's what happened, although I'm sure it's not. The magic of letting things unfold without stopping them from unfolding with your conclusions or judgments or closing the door. The door is always open for magic. And without patience, I would say the ability to spot magic or receive magic or invite it might be limited. Don't take my word for that. That's what it looks like to me. So for this month of May, a great month to practice patience, whatever hemisphere you're in, because things are changing. Depending on where you are, spring is coming or has come, which seemed like that would never happen, at least to us up here in the north. It's like, oh, I don't think this is going to be the year it doesn't ever happen. Well, it is happening. And in other hemispheres, it's turning to winter and things are moving. They do not need your help. So they are a beautiful example of patience in and of themselves. So I hope wherever you are, it's awesome. And till next time, I send you my love.